I'm Adam.
And I'm Mike.
Welcome to The Dad Experience,
a podcast where dads can connect
and openly share stories. Hey guys, we've got an exciting episode for you all. This week, Adam and Eric sit down and we talk to Tommy Avalone. He's a director or producer. You can catch his work currently on Netflix, The Bill Murray Story. We talk about that and all things dad. So join us, won't you, on this amazing journey we all like to call
The Dad Experience.
Welcome to The Dad Experience. Today we have a very, very special guest. We have Tommy on with us. Tommy is an actor, a producer. You may know some of Tommy's work if you've been on Netflix as of late. He recently has a documentary, The Bill Murray Stories, out that just came out this past December on Netflix. And it is an amazing documentary. If you're a Bill Murray fan, you have to check it out. He's got a lot of other work out there. I Am Santa Claus, Community College, a lot of things that he's done over the years. And we're just really happy to have him on. I reached out to him because I saw he was wearing a dad t-shirt in the in the documentary. I'm like, this would be a perfect guest for The Dad Experience. So Tommy, welcome to The Dad Experience.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I just want to say, I'm not really an actor. I just happen to put myself in a couple of things that I've either produced.
Okay. So, I'm going by your IMDb page. I know you do more on the production end, right?
Yeah, I try to change it for some reason. But if you look at my acting credits, it's usually like the guy who yells, whoa, orders decaf. just very, very small things that I think are funny.
Right on, right on. No big deal. But so yeah, and definitely, you know, obviously that the latest Bill Murray Stories, man, that really caught my attention. It was awesome. What was kind of the idea behind that? Kind of what got you going on that project?
Well, we had just kind of come off of directing the I Am Santa Claus movie, and I heard these Bill Murray stories a lot. They're happening more and more, and I thought this would be a really interesting documentary to do, where if we treated the stories as if they were Bigfoot, like not Bill Murray like Bigfoot, because he's obviously real, but the stories as like a Bigfoot detective novel documentary sort of thing. And coming off from Santa Claus, you know, Bill's the kind of guy that pops into your life and makes this magical moment and disappears. It's not unlike a Santa Claus. So it felt like the next logical step.
Nice. No, that it was a great doc, and hopefully more people, some of our listeners, will check that out on Netflix. So we always like to start off the Dad Experience show by just asking you, who lives with you at home? What is the makeup of your household?
It's me, my wife, and my son.
Nice. No pets involved in this one?
No.
Yeah, you know, more and more as of late when I ask people, they don't have the pets anymore. It's interesting. I forgot them a few times, and I don't forget them anymore. So, well.
Yeah, it's like it's really tough to travel and go places and stuff like that because, you know, you really don't. I wouldn't want to travel with a dog, and I would never have a cat, you know. it's tough.
Yeah, it is tough. It is tough to have that extra animal. So being a director and producer, how do you balance your busy schedule with your kids' needs and being on the road to promote your work or maybe being on location with your work? How do you kind of balance that with your father duties?
So that's tough, you know, like, so there's the great thing about what I do is there's crazy times and then less crazy times, you know, and I really take advantage of those less crazy times. You know, like right now I'm in the middle of like a deadline and where like I had to like edit a whole bunch of stuff right before we submitted to some of these festivals. So those are the times it's unfortunate that I just can't be around my son as much, you know, but the other times when it's like early in the production and all that sort of stuff, I sometimes have a whole day, a whole week, you know, a whole, like a lot of time just to dedicate it. So it's like, you know, when my son was first born, I was in a lot of the pre-production sort of stuff. So for the 6 months of him, like I would spend every day with him. And when my wife would go to work, me and him had a lot of time where we would just go to the mall, just play around, go to the park or whatever. Just kind of have that bonding experience. And that's the stuff like I know a lot of people go to office and all that stuff, but like that, it's sometimes you just feel so guilty working, you know? And I'm fortunate enough to really like, during the not so busy times, I can spend a lot of time with him.
Nice. How does he feel about maybe going? Does he ever come on location with you, or kind of spend some of that time there? I know you talked a little bit about it, but how does he feel about that, being on some sort of set or on location?
Yeah. I mean, well, like for 2 years, before he was two, because that's when he could fly for free. We lived in New Jersey. His first 3 months, he went to New York Comic Con. He's been to the South by Southwest Film Festival. He's been to Oregon. He's been to California. He's been to Disneyland like 12 times. He's been to Portland and Washington. So he's traveled so many times. He's flown more than half my friends. So it's really awesome getting him to see these things. And we try to give him a different experience or a different sort of life than at least me. Like, I didn't fly until like, I don't know, somewhere in the middle when I went to Disney World when I was a kid, you know, but he's been to plenty of states before he was two.
Yeah, that's cool. What is your best tip for traveling with kids? Man, I just got off this summer. We took our family to Europe because my family's in Europe, and we took two overseas, which was a crazy trip. But what, any tip out there that you just remember that you wish somebody would have told you that you didn't have to learn on your own?
Yeah, I mean, it's just get them traveling when they're young. I think he flew from New Jersey to California when he was either 10 or 11 months, you know? A lot of like bottles, foods, is something for him constantly to be playing with, or to you know, try to book the flight to where his sleep patterns would be so he could sleep through most of it. And that's what we do. A lot of the times when we go back to New Jersey, I always do red eyes, so that way he just sleeps right through it.
Put him in those PJs, make it feel like it's nighttime, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good tip.
But the thing is that either drinking or eating something on the go up and the take down, you know, because, you know, you don't want their ears to pop.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, those were definitely the rougher points. So kind of, you know, pigging back on the last question, we talked about how he's been on set and managing that busy time. How do you and your partner handle the many hours away, and how do you balance that parenting lifestyle? Because I'm assuming, maybe I'm wrong, that your work takes you many other places and you have to balance the father or parenting responsibilities. How do you guys kind of balance that?
Yeah, a lot of it's Skype, you know, or FaceTime, all that sort of stuff. Like the fact that he could see me, you know, we try not to have a day that goes by where he doesn't see you, both of us, you know? So, you know, I just started finishing this movie called Waddle and Weep, and we at that time I was able to travel a lot with Miles and my wife, with my son and my wife, so that was very great. But then there's times where like I was doing the festival run for Bill Murray, where like I'd be in London, but only in London for 2 days, and it didn't make sense for them to come with us because that would, it's like a six or eight hour difference. So it really didn't mess with his sleeping schedule. And just for 2 days, it didn't seem worth it. So, but we always like FaceTime and check in. So that's really always what I would do.
And Tommy, when you get back, does your wife say, okay, you've been gone, here you go. You're up, batter up.
No, I like to think we have respect for each other.
Oh, that's good.
That's nice. See, what I think when you guys messaged me, I said that one of the first things I said is, like, I don't like some of the stereotypes of, like, dads in sitcoms or TV shows where, like, a lot of times where someone goes, oh, I have my kids this weekend, or I got to watch my kids. It's like, no, you have to be a dad. You are a dad. You know, like, that shouldn't be just a chore. You know, it's something you want to do and things you should be celebrated, you know? But, yeah, no, my wife doesn't do that, and I wouldn't do that to her, you know?
You guys are nice. I got to tell you, so – my wife travels a lot for work, and when she comes, you know, she'll be gone a week long stretch, 8 days, 9 days, sometimes 4 days. She gets back and says, "Baby, I love you. Batter up. You have fun now." They don't want me to put them to bed anymore. They want mommy to get them to bed. They want mommy to wake them up in the morning. I'm like, "You guys, your turn." And then when I travel, which is not that often, she's like, when I come home, she's like, "Okay, here you go." So you guys are nice. We like to trade it off when we have to.
Yeah, we understand too, like how much traveling actually takes out of you as well. You know,
well, that's the big thing. Yeah, it's got to be like the next day. It can't be like you got home and go for it. You know what I mean? Like, that's terrible. That, like, I'll, you know, we give each other the night to sleep, and then we say, "All right, have fun." You now I'm gonna sleep in for a little bit.
Yeah.
I agree. And you know, sometimes I think too. I think the culture is changing in society, hopefully is changing a little bit, which is kind of why when we started the dad experience was to kind of create those more of those opportunities to see that, you know, being a dad isn't a chore. It's a reward too. And I think sometimes with folks that have maybe had, you know, ups and downs or in the past that may have had issues in the past that maybe struggled to get their first child or their second child, maybe sometimes that makes a difference. Did you have any sort of experience with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a theory of mine as well, you know, and something I really don't talk about too much, but like, you know, we lost our daughter. It was stillbirth. It was, 33 weeks. So like I was able to hold like a real grown baby, you know, and it's one of the situations where it just makes you look at things a little bit differently, where I don't know what parent I'd be if I didn't lose my first child. You know, I think it's made me a different parent. You know, I mean, I guess they say, what's it say, that you don't know the light before you see the dark, or I forget what the phrase is.
I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
And then I just think like there's certain dads or parents that, you know, just kind of like to make fun of. Make light of being parents. You know, like I've gone to plenty of different parties where other kids and they're like they're teasing their kid or just like trying to be that Roseanne character, you know, someone they saw in the 90s making like jokes about being a parent or, oh, you know, we don't sleep. It's like, okay, you know, everything's good. You know, the kid's alive. You have the child, you know, it's not something that, you know, you were forced to do. So yeah, I do think tragedy like that makes you just rethink everything that you do.
No, I agree. I think that's, you know, I have a theory similar to that. My wife and I struggled for a long time. We went through IVF. We went through many injections. We went through eating differently, everything under the sun. And then we ended up having a failed IVF and then a successful IVF that was twins, and we lost a twin. So I think all those experiences compounded into one for me to just become a better dad and be different, because you like you said, you never know what you don't have until you can't have it. And then when you get it, it's like, oh my God, you hit the jackpot, and you don't want to do anything wrong, or you want to try and be the best that you can be.
Yeah. And then like, you know, like I'm not like, I understand. I mean, there's tough times. There's things that you want to complain about. And if I ever did that, it would be like between me and my wife, you know, like, I went to I met up with a couple different people the other day, and like, I guess for some reason when guys get together, they like to just like be the stereotypical guys, you know? And I remember this one guy was like, yeah, I love my daughter, but like 85% of the time, I just feel like it was a mistake. But that 15% where they go, I love you, dad. Like, it makes it all worth it. And like, I guess they wanted to like act as if that was like a funny comment or all that stuff. I just said, wow, and that's the saddest thing I've ever heard in my goddamn life. You know, it's
absolutely. Like, holy wow. Moly.
That's wild.
And I know that they didn't mean it. They didn't mean it. You know, they were just trying to be funny or, you know, or maybe they didn't mean it. But like, it was just one of those situations where I don't know if that ratio is absolute right. Like, I'm not sure what polls he's taking, you know, or all right. That sort of stuff. It was just one of those things where, like, for some reason, people feel the need to complain or be negative about situations where you shouldn't be.
Yeah, no, that is a pretty out of way ratio to me, but maybe I'm wrong too. That's yeah, crazy.
I've never heard anyone say anything like that.
No, I haven't either.
The guy next to me who didn't have a kid was like laughing, and I just wasn't. You know, like I wouldn't let it go.
No, I wouldn't because, yeah. And I think that anybody that is a parent or that has experienced being a parent in any way, it's like there are downtimes. Don't get me wrong. There's downtimes, but there's way more good times than downtimes. And there's never a chance to me that I would never want to. It's never been a mistake.
Yeah. So I don't, I just think it's interesting, you know, like, because I've had plenty of friends that just, like, there's a friend of mine who, I'm sorry, there's a bunch of stuff popped on my computer. Sorry.
No, you're okay.
There's a friend of mine that had not gone through any sort of tragedy and absolutely loves being a dad, you know, and so there's definitely good people out there.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? It might be a humor thing. It might be a joke. People, you catch people on different times and different days, and it may mean something totally different. So yeah. you can only go so far with something like that, too. So, yeah, no, I agree. It's one of the best things that I've ever done. So yeah. It's been a lot of fun.
And, you know, also, too, like working with movies and stuff like that, a lot of times when people talk about their scripts or all that stuff, they go, this is my baby. It's like, I think you should have a little bit more respect for a human.
This is true.
A script or an idea or a project, like I've had projects where I put my heart and soul in that I absolutely love. I would never call it my baby, you know?
No, it is. It's kind of undermining a little bit of what you do or what you do as a parent.
Yeah, and then a lot of that time, it's like, I just don't think people are paying attention to the words they're actually saying.
No, what, they don't.
They're thinking of it from, like, a creator, like, I birthed this creative baby, but they're not thinking of what it really means to actually birth a human, you know, like, into, like, to raise and take care of one, you know what I mean? Like, before I had a kid, I used to say, the first TV ever, I you know, like, the first big screen TV, I said, oh, this is my baby, this is my pride and joy. Once I had kids, I was like, I felt the same, I was like, what a stupid thing to say, and, you know, it's just, you don't think about that. But it is a weird thing, a weird concept to call your. I mean, it's not a weird concept to call your writing, your project, your baby if you don't know. But once you have a child, that like goes out the window. It's like your baby is literally your child right there, and the thing that like your whatever it may be, however they came to you, that's what's most important.
And yeah. I wonder too how many males versus females say something like that. I bet it's more male.
I don't know, you'd be surprised.
I
think so many people just have the lights off, you know, like where they're just not thinking. You know, like my friends have a podcast called Don't Be an Idiom, and it's like origin stories of commonly used phrases, the idioms, and where they kind of come from, where they derive from. And it makes me sometimes think of just like what people are saying. Like for instance, like when me and my wife first got married, it's like, you know, people would say, when are you having a baby? When are you baby? It's like, do you understand what you're actually asking? You know, there's an act that has to happen here. So you're more or less asking, like, when are you guys going to have unprotected sex? You know, it's like, it's
or why can't you figure it out when you don't really know what's going on either?
Yeah, yeah. So it's just so weird. But people kind of just are used to hearing phrases or used to saying words, and they don't pay attention to what they're actually saying.
That's like, I was just actually having this conversation with my wife and her and two of our friends yesterday, talking about the concept of how before you have kids and you kind of know what people, and you don't really know what people struggle through, if they have a tragedy, if they've gone through IVF, if they can't have, you know, they can't conceive at all. You know, my wife's friend was saying, she goes, I used to say, oh, when are you guys thinking about kids, or are you trying to have kids, or, you know, you're going to go for a second one? And once you have a child, you realize, like, oh, there's so much that goes into this process of actually conceiving. I should say, some people will get lucky the first time they go on a honeymoon, they pop it, let's give it a shot, and boom, all of a sudden, 9 months later, there's a baby, and they're like, oh, what did we just do? We didn't even think this through, right? But for most people, there's a thought process that goes in, and so until you're in that situation, it's like the lights are off. You really have no idea what it means to ask people that are maybe in their 30s and 40s, or you think you're having kids, or, you know, are you planning to, because they probably are. And if they're not, they're going to tell you straight off the bat, now, we're not interested. But for those that don't talk about it, you know, you don't want to bring it up unless they're willing to talk about it with you. And it's just a strange thing that you don't figure out until you start to be in that situation.
Yeah. It's just, and also too, it's like so many people are saying stuff behind like Facebook or a status and stuff like that. They just forget, like, sometimes when, like, there's, like, you just forget real interaction that you're asking real personal questions, you know, and it's just weird.
No, it is. It is. So kind of moving forward on the family life, what do you think your biggest letdown was to your kids or your family? Has there been any moment where you're just like, man, I made a mistake? And maybe kind of how did you handle that and resolve that situation?
A mistake in what way?
Just as a parent, you like, it could be really anything. It's like, oh man, I need to be home more, and I resolved it this way. Or, man, I yelled at my son, you know, yesterday, and I was really hard on him. And how did you kind of resolve that? It really could be anything. You know, if there's been any sort of dad, I don't want to say fail, because we learn from our mistakes, but any sort of dad issue that you may have had in parenting that you thought afterwards, man, I could have handled that better, and this is how I would have resolved it, or how I resolved it.
Sure. I mean, I guess I can't think of anything right now. Like I remember, you know, my son was breastfed. So when my wife would go to the office, it took me a while for him to actually take bottles, you know? And that was very, very, very stressful. And I remember, I guess losing my cool once, and I felt bad about it. Cause I remember if my parents were ever to lose their cool with me, I would remember how that made me feel. So I wouldn't do that. But I remember tearing up the first time he took a bottle, because I was like, I couldn't believe that I got it done.
Yeah.
But yeah, my son's 2.5. Maybe I'm not aware of some of the mistakes I've made yet. But I know they're out there. I just can't think of them currently.
And you know what? For me, it started to happen. Not the mistakes, but the regret, the things, like, and not even yelling, but certain things, like, where it started happening. My son is about four and a half. My daughter is about to turn 2. And I felt like some of those dad things where I was like, oh shit, I'm turning into like my father himself. Or my dad, I have a great dad, but like those things that you do where you start to lose control of the patients happened as he got older, where they're so cute when they're so young and they listen to you and they do everything. And then when they start to form their personalities, it's happening now, and they don't want to go to bed and they're challenging you. That's where it's such a new phase that sometimes I found for myself that like I would yell, and I have to learn, like, oh, he doesn't know yet. Like an example here that I always, and I think I might have even talked about this with Adam, when we moved into a new apartment about almost 2 years ago, and right when we moved in, my wife had just given birth to our daughter, so she was 6 weeks old. My wife had gotten sick, and I don't know if Adam told you this, but I co-wrote and co-directed a movie, and I was just coming off crazy round of production. I also work full time in advertising. So I was going full time 60 hours a week, and then shooting at night and doing all the production stuff, the steps in between that. And we had bought a new car and all this stuff as we just moved. And it's our first Saturday in the apartment. I take my son to get some paint, and I give him a water bottle. And I sit in the back. I said, all right, I'm going to give you all this water bottle, but you can't squirt it all over the car. And he goes, I won't do it. And I'm driving, and I hear him laughing and giggling and giggling and giggling. And I park, and I turn, and he had sprayed the entire water bottle all over the car, all over the seats. And I'm laughing now because it's funny. But in that moment, I went, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You promised me you wouldn't do this. And he looked at me like, Dad, I'm 2.5. What did you expect from me? You know what I mean? I told my mom, I was like, he didn't listen to me. She goes, Eric, he's 2.5 years old. And so that was like a big moment for me to realize, oh, right, like, he's a baby. Like I'm putting these adult things on him, these old adult expectations. And I had to take a step back and realize, like, he's a kid, and he should be a kid, and he should not listen to me. He should do these silly things. And that was a big learning moment for me. But I always go back to that moment where I freaked out in the car.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, so I take like these like weird inventory of like images, you know, and it's like, if I were to ever raise my voice to my son, it's like, I think to myself, much like you just said, am I really going to fight with a 2-year-old? Like, is that how I'm going to spend my time right now? You know, like, cause like it's a ridiculous image of someone in their 30s fighting with someone who is not even potty trained yet, you know? And it's like, okay, well, I guess you're not supposed to say no in the beginning, you know, you're supposed to like explain to them what they can't do, you know, cause they don't understand no or that sort of stuff. But like, it's just like, you just forget that there's not this like years or decade, at least a decade of knowledge to understand some of these things, you know?
Yeah. No. It's hard.
It is very hard. I'm always being reminded.
I'm sorry. I was just saying, I'm just realizing how many times I'm saying, you know, or like, it's, I would love to try to edit all that out.
Well, right.
No,
I always say absolutely all the time. So, and I'm sure our listeners love that.
I'm just being aware of all my words, because I would always cut those things out in the docs to save time, you know?
No, absolutely. I just said absolutely. And I said absolutely. Well, this is a good place for us to take a short break. The Dad Experience is a part of the Parents On Demand Network. You can find us on their app that you can get at the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store. Stick around to the end of this episode to hear about another great parenting podcast from the Parents On Demand Network. And after the break, we're going to talk to Tommy more about parenting, more about his production and all the films that he's working on, and just a lot more great information to come. So stick around after the break. Welcome back to the Dad Experience. Here, having a great episode with Tommy, and we're just going to continue on with things. Eric, take it away.
Sure, Tommy. So, you know, Adam mentioned how much he loved the documentary, and I want to say I loved it too. I thought it was great, and it was like paced really well, and I liked the way. I love the scenes where you tried calling, and you know the struggle you go through, how to pitch him on this documentary, and you know, as I was thinking about our interview with you, I started thinking, okay, like, how do we apply questions from this to this world? Because I'm sure you get, you know, as you talk about the documentary, you get questions asked specifically about it and the production and what you were doing and what made you kind of go into, as you said, kind of like this Bigfoot search for the stories about Bill Murray. But I sort of think it's like, you obviously are a fan and you've thought deeply about it beyond just kind of the surface level. Oh, like Bill Murray shows up and does stuff with people. You've kind of taken to a deeper level on what it means to live kind of like a Bill Murray based lifestyle. So I thought to myself, like, what kind of advice do you think Bill Murray would give a new dad? And you know, you seem to be maybe an expert on it, so if you had any ideas around that, and I could always jump into if you need anything there.
You know, there's, I forget the clip, but if you look up Jimmy Kimmel, Bill Murray, like, he gives him advice on, like, I think it was like Jimmy Kimmel was just about to have a baby and Bill Murray said, just bring different lights. Like is it just about having the baby? He's like, the lights in the hospital are awful. Bring in your own Christmas lights or your own Christmas light, just to kind of present a different sort of mood and all that sort of stuff. But like I said, I normally don't talk about it, but since I did, like the loss of our daughter, you know, when that happened, we were like kind of in the beginning stages of thinking about this movie. And when, you know, the hospital that we were at, like, had a psychologist and they would talk about, you know, live in the moment, be present here, you know, like, and like any, I guess any sort of therapy or any sort of like loss, they teach you to be kind of like in the moment and present. And then when I started researching some of these stories with Bill, you would see him saying some of these words, you know, like, oh, Bill lives in the moment. In that clip from Toronto Film Festival, he goes, as they say, to be available, you know, so like all these sort of words were like clicking. And I'm not quite sure if I didn't go through that, I would have been aware of them as well. I'm not sure on that, you know, but that was one of the situations where going through that, having a psychologist say some of these words, then reading Bill say some of these words, I was able to kind of put an idea of a movie together about living in the moment, about being present, that like whenever I scroll through Twitter to look up how people are talking about the movie, because I do that constantly, you know, people were saying like, oh, I was going through a hard time and this helped me out, you know, and just the idea of like, it just doesn't matter. Live in the moment, being present, being available, you know, saying that yes and approach to certain things. So I think if Bill were to give any sort of fatherly advice, I think it would be that, you know, to like, you know, not just worry about work or worry about anything else, but be there with the kid and play and enjoy, because, you know, I take so many pictures because I just know that I don't want to forget this moment. I don't want to forget what he looked like during this time. And I just try to stay to this as much as possible. So
yeah, that's great advice. It's funny that the being present thing is something that my wife and I talk about a lot, and something my wife is constantly saying to us. You know, she said when we come home from work, phones down, we sit with the kids, we watch a show with them, bedtime, all the stuff is, and then once they're done asleep, pick your phone up again, check your email, do whatever you need to do. And it's an important thing. And, you know, in this kind of age that we live in, and I'm sure it's been ever, but like where there's so many distractions around us, it's more important to really kind of be try to be locked in with your kids. Because I think, you know, like you said, we're their role model for them too. So they're seeing how we act. So if they see us disengaged from them, it's how they're going to engage with other people and what they do too. So that resonates pretty deeply with me. It's something that we try on a daily basis in our lives too.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that sometimes I can, like, I'll be my son and I have to answer an email and, like, you know, he gives me Buzz Lightyear, you know, and like, it's like, I have to put it down for a second because I have to like answer something real quick. And it's like one of those situations, like, I wonder, like, what am I teaching him here? You know, like what, like, and I know that's probably not the best version of myself when I'm doing that, you know, but it's just, you know, it's tough. I remember, like, it was a Patton Oswalt joke where, like, I think something came up on the TV and it scared his daughter or son. I forget what it was, but like, he's like, oh, I guess that's the first image that they'll have in psychology. Or I wonder what effect this has caused on
right,
my kid.
Right. Right. Of course.
Yeah. And it's like I'm a huge, huge professional wrestling fan. Like, I love WWE, you know, but me and my wife try to figure out, like, when is the age in which he can watch that, where he can understand that you can't just body slam your friend, you know?
I know. Well, you know, it's hard. Like, my dad, he taught people how to box. So he's been teaching people to box for like, you know, probably 35, 40 years now. And, you know, my son's name is Miles. Also, when Miles was around 1.5, 2, he got a mini boxing gloves and a mini punching bag. And my son was punching. He's like, oh, my dad's going, oh, look at him. He's an amateur. He's a pro. He's been great. But if it came to a point where, you know, at that age, he was like, he was punching around. He wasn't hitting other kids. He seemed to know better, but he was hitting me. He was hitting my wife. He's coming over like, and he really did have a great punch. Where it was like, we actually had to say, like, Dad, you can't train him for a little bit because he's not processing and this is okay. Or there's a period where my son would run and I'd walk into the house and he'd literally yell, punch you in the penis. And he'd run and punch me in the penis. The first thing I did when I walked in, and we had to be like, I'd be like, you have to stop. This is not okay. And then we took a break for all. Now he's like 4, 4.5. And we're realizing, like, he's starting to get the grasp again of what hitting and hurting means as he's in nursery school and pre-K and playing with other kids. And so I think that's probably the age where you can start to, like, mold them and be like, all right, they start to see right from wrong because they're around enough people and socialize them further to understand that maybe this isn't okay. Maybe. I mean, that's the rationale I tell myself, at least now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because you still know, you know, you don't want. Yeah. Yeah. It's tough because you never really know, because every kid's different, you know.
It's true. And I gotta say, some kid punched Miles in the eye last week in school, and I, you know, I'm saying to myself, well, I was like, oh, that's hard. What did you do? He said, I cried. And I felt like, such a sweet kid. I'm like, you cried, you didn't hit him back, it's so nice. And then later then I'm talking to my mom, and she goes, well, he's got to stand up for himself. And so that night I said, well, Miles, I said, if he hits you again, listen, he goes, I don't want to hit him back, I won't get a gold star at school. I said, well, Miles, you know what? If he hits you again, I promise you, I said, I'll give you a gold star. Nanny, your grandma, I'll give you a gold star. The teachers, they won't even pay attention because I know for a fact that this kid's a troublemaker. So they'll turn their head. I said, and you know what? You're going to have to just sock him right back, or you're going to have to kick him or something, because this kid's not going to learn his lesson. And then a teacher wound up telling my mom that this kid's been punching all the different kids, and the kids that have hit him back, he stops bothering. So unfortunately, like, we live in a world where, like, you have to stand up and defend yourself, but it's only now that we can kind of give that advice. I would never have said that to him otherwise, you know. I would have said it a month ago, maybe. But anyways, that's a whole tangent for another episode. But
well, it's so funny because, like, so, you know, we go to these, like, I don't even know what they're called, but it's like schools where, like, you know, you're still there, you know, and like the kids get to play with all the other kids.
Yeah.
And there's these certain kids that are just brats, and they're just like, would take something from my son, and like, I went down, like, I wrote down their names just so I would remember them, you know? Like, it's like I just know Ethan and Coleman were awful, awful kids, you know?
Right, right. Right.
And I just, like, I eyed them down the whole time. Where it's just like, okay, I know who you are, you know? Like,
yeah.
And I don't want to recognize bad behavior.
it's hard to walk that balance. It's hard to know when it's a balance and when your kid's being, you know, it sounds like your kid is trying to rationalize it and be the bigger person, but I don't know, like you said, I don't know if it always works or how it works. So, and I thank God I'm not at that situation yet.
I figured me and you, we could talk about that during an episode at some point. Going, I can give you my deep dark
there you
theories
go.
On it.
And, absolutely.
And I like Tommy that you said you wrote the kid's name down, because I was like, I got this kid's number now. I know who he is. Okay. I was like, yeah. I see his brother and sisters don't behave well. The father doesn't discipline him. I got the whole family's number. Okay, I know who you guys are.
Yeah, and it's so funny too. It's like it's like Malcolm McDowell, The Outliers, like where it's like you're not just looking at the person, but you're looking at the behavior that comes before it, you know. And it's like you know, certain friends of mine who maybe not have the best relationship, whether it's they're not married or whatever, and maybe there's arguments there. That's when the kid is like a little bit more like crazy and all that sort of stuff. Whereas like we try to have like a very like non-screaming atmosphere for our son, you know. And I think he's a little bit more calmer for that, you know. So, but when you're entering in these things, it's like you don't know what all these other kids are doing, and like,
right.
So you're just like I just watched that Beautiful Boy movie, you know, and it's like, you're just like, okay, well, how can you foresee some of this stuff? And then you know, cause it not to happen. But it's like, I grew up with some really interesting characters who've gone on to, you know, play around with heroin, gone to jail for stabbing someone, you know, but like that didn't alter the way I behaved. But some people will do that and then become that heroin guy or become that guy who goes to jail. And it's like, you just like, well, how does that, so it's like, to me, it's all like science and trying to figure out how behaviors learn, taught, and all that sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know. And that's the kind of thought that as your kid gets older, it comes deeper and deeper into you, and you start to meet their friends and things like that. Like, those are things I worried about on like a, just kind of like a theoretical level. And obviously my kid's 4.5. I'm not worried about him start shooting up or anything like that. Right. Yeah. But like, you start to think about like, oh, who are they hanging out with? Who are they going to be growing up with? What are those people's parents like? And you realize like, you know, you think your parents are crazy when you're younger, if they stay on top of you or they were a little strict and things like, and then you realize as you become a parent too, everyone says you always understand your family after, right. You understand them, but you understand like there are things that you have to do to just monitor your kid's behavior. And you have to hope that like, you teach them enough that they can make the right decision in those kind of moments, or that chemically, like if they make the wrong one, that they can handle themselves better. I don't know. It's a really hard thing, and it's getting probably further away from being a dad of infants and toddlers. But it's something I think that you have to have in your brain from an early age as a parent and as a dad. Because if you don't and you're lackadaisical about it, I think that's where you can let your kids get into trouble. Or you can't set them up to handle themselves in a situation where they might get into trouble.
Like, it's just like the consequences. Like, do people fully understand that? Like, I remember being like in my early 20s and doing certain things or saying certain things, because I didn't see the harm in it until you like gone through something. And you're like, oh, that's how that feels. I wouldn't want to do that to anyone.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But yeah, I want to see everyone's parents. Like, I want to see who these people are, because that's where all the fault comes in. It's like other people's parents, you know?
Yeah,
sure does.
Yeah. So we have a reoccurring segment that we do here on the show before we close out the show, and that's things we can't wait to see through our children's eyes. Is there something, an experience that you can't wait for your child to see, or something that you've already seen through their eyes that you experienced that takes you back to that childhood moment that brought you all that excitement? Is there something out there that you can't wait to share with your child?
Yeah, well, like I said, my son's probably been to Disney at least 12 times already. And I'm a huge Disney fan, and I love meeting Darkwing Duck as a friend, as a child. I love seeing Donald Duck. I just bought tickets to the 90s night for Disneyland in March, where I'm going to hopefully meet Scrooge for the first time. These are delusional things that I allow myself to know. I know there are people who need it, you know, but I buy into the magic. And my son's real into Toy Story right now. And we just took him not too long ago, and he started to see Buzz and Woody, and like he was able to recognize them, you know, but not fully appreciate yet. So I'm very excited for him to see, because the way he looks at those figures, he always has a smile on his face. I want him to like smile at these like these mascots of some kind, and you know, eventually down the line for him, me and him to go to wrestling shows together. But those are certain things, because it's like, you know, I make movies on people's passions, whether it's dressing like Santa Claus, Bill Murray, Ghostbusters, or all that sort of stuff. So I'm very curious, anxious, and excited to see his passions and the way he reacts to those passions.
No, yeah. So tell us a little bit about things that you're working on and where people can find your work and all your latest work and kind of how to find more out about you and what you do.
Cool. I guess I'm on Instagram. That's TommyAvalone3. I post pictures. but I Am Santa Claus was my first documentary. That's on Amazon Prime. We follow five different people who portray Santa Claus. Gay Santa, a guy who's legally changed his name to Santa Claus. One Santa Claus got drunk. And one Santa worked at a swingers club in Portland. But Mick Foley is one of the guys who portrays Santa for the first time. He's a WWE Hall of Famer, wrestler, former champion. So that was fun. Morgan Spurlock was the executive producer on that one. And then I directed the Bill Murray stories, Life Lessons Learned from a Mythical Man, and that's on Netflix now. And then we just finished up this movie. I know it's a silly title, but it's called Waldo on Weed, but it's more serious. It's my friend Brian's son had eye cancer at 6 months, and they started using cannabis oil to help counteract the results of the chemo. And like, I'm not like a pot smoker, like I don't smoke pot at all, but to me it was like what a father would do to save his son. And this whole thing he filmed, it was 2014, he filmed on a flip cam, like one of those old flip cam things. So I was going through all this footage of him leaving Pennsylvania to go to California to illegally smuggle this sort of drug so that way his son could feel better, and, you know, talking to different doctors and senators and stuff like that about cannabis and stuff like that. So it's not like a pot smoking sort of movie. It's just like, this is what a father had to do at this particular time and what is kind of happening because of people like him. So that's my pitch.
Oh, that's and when is that one expected to be out, or is it out?
We're going to be doing the festivals this year.
Okay,
so I'll find out more in a little bit.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that and keep our listeners updated to all that. So, you know, it's been an awesome ride here. Thank you so much for joining us today, Tommy.
Thank you. I hope I didn't sound like a jerk at all when I was talking about other parents being bad.
No, you don't. You know, we learn from each other, and that's why this is here. We learn from our experiences, from other experiences, and the more we can kind of cultivate all that and bring it together in one place, I think the better we all are. And heck, if anything, I know I learned a lot, and I'm assuming Eric did too. So we do appreciate you being here today.
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate talking, because it's just like, I love being a dad. I love being a parent. I think a lot of people just rely on old tropes of stuff, where it's just like, you don't have to be the Roseanne, John Goodman sort of characters of parenting. You can actually like enjoy it.
And we'll leave it right there. Thanks so much for listening. You can find us at Dad Experience on Instagram, or email us experienceanddad@gmail.com, and shoot us an email if you have a question for Tommy, have a question for us, or a show idea, or want to be on the show, let us know. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time on The Dad Experience.
This podcast is a proud member of Parents on Demand, a network of high-quality shows for families just like yours. Download our free network app on Apple and Android and listen to your favorite episodes on the go.